Anybody that's new, wondering what I'm signing up for, I'm signing up for an organization of people, the Drink No Matter What. And on October the 11th, 1986, I signed up for the with you guys. IRS came after me for $80,000. I don't drink no matter what. Loss of marriage at 20 years sober. I don't drink no matter what. Went broke, 22 years sober. I don't drink no matter what. If you're new and you're thinking of signing up with us, we're an organization of people who drink no matter what, who do not drink no matter what.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome. It's the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, featuring the collected voices of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am Alice, an alcoholic in transition.
In transition?
Yes.
I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic in Greensboro, North Carolina. I'm in a more stable situation, evidently, than you are. Where are you?
I'm in Atlanta. I'm house hunting. And, you know, I have this level of freedom that I didn't choose. I don't know that I want, but I'm about to enjoy. I'm about to probably spend the next 3 months globe hopping.
That sounds a little bit stressful to not have a house to live in. How is AA playing a part? Are you sane?
Well, you know, I'm no more insane than usual. But, you know, the thing is interesting is because I have all these old ideas, right? You know, when I was a kid, I had a lot of housing instability. So housing stability has been really important to me. And one of my old ideas is I have to have a beautiful house and my art has to be hanging in it and it needs to be a certain way. And I made a series of decisions that left me with my things in storage. And you know what? It's okay. You know, interestingly enough, we're going to get to talk to two guys who I love today. And I heard one of them speak last week. And he said that sometimes when my plans don't come off, it's because God is using me. And I have to just accept that what is happening right now is God's will.
Accept it and work with what is available to me.
You know, for people who are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we say these things that sound crazy, that nothing outside has to change for me to have happiness, joy, and freedom. That happiness, joy, and freedom is an internal condition. It has nothing to do with things outside. You know, I got here and I thought, well, I need my driver's license and I need a car and I need, do you know what I mean? It took me 2 years to get a registration, car insurance, and a license with the same address, right? And so I thought I needed to organize things outside for joy. And it turns out that's not true. What I need to organize for me to have joy is my internal world.
I can't control the world and I can't control the things that come my way, but I do have control over my reactions to what happens.
I mean, me and God, because on my own, I don't have control over that, but me and God have control over my reaction to the world.
And it's my reactions that there's some room to play with. I mean, that's how we end up. We have the expression serenity in calamity, which is a hard thing to pull off. But I've, you know, there's a couple of times in my life I've been able to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm doing it right now. And it's a growth opportunity. You don't grow in the comfort zone. That's not where you grow in the trial and the low spot.
You're being flexible. Bending instead of being rigid and like going, no, it has to go my way.
Well, you know, there's this other saying at Alcoholics Anonymous, let go or get dragged. There's always that. Let go or get dragged.
That would be a drag. So what's on the show today, Alice?
I am so excited to welcome our listening audience to two of my absolute favorite fellows. These are folks that really are my AA family, Ralph W. and Ronald W. And I want to say that they're two members of four people who are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're quite well known. They're from South Central Los Angeles. And they've got a big reach and a powerful message of recovery.
Two members of four people. I was wondering if we're going to have like people with like extra heads or what's going on here?
The extra personalities. No, four brothers are in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well, I'm looking forward to this, and we'll meet them in just a minute.
You can give a gift subscription of Grapevine or Lavinia.
Grapevine has a long waiting list of incarcerated members who want one. Get your group, district, area, or AA friends to join in.
It's easy. Go to aagrapevine.org and look for Carry the Message at the top of the site.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Los Angeles, California, all my life. My sobriety date is October the 11th, 1986. So I've been practicing this way of life for 37 of my 70 years on this planet.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ronald W. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date of July the 14th of 1986. I'm from Los Angeles, California, born and raised. I'm 69 years old, so I'm 1 year younger chronologically than my brother. As you note, I'm 88 days more sober.
Don't let him catch up.
If I mess up, I've got a long way to catch up. So
both got sober in 1986. What was going on in 1986?
Clearly devastation.
It wasn't a winning streak.
Not the wings to victory, huh?
Ronald, you were the first to get sober.
Well, actually, Ralph was the first to get sober. Ralph just didn't stay sober. Ralph was the trailblazer. He was the one that had gone into treatment first in 1985. I saw him, so I came in a couple of months after him. And so then we kind of like played the relapse game back and forth for a bit. And then I finally, the first one that came to stay. It ended up with me primarily getting physically beaten in front of my mother on July the 13th of 1986 that caused me to really see the clarity of just of my downfall. So I went into a treatment program the very next day on July the 14th.
My brothers and I, we grew up and we were really tight all our lives. All six, it's six of us. Four of us need to be in the program and the four that need to be are. And so we were tight, playing ball as kids growing up. And so turns out later in life, we also were still tight and we were going hard at it in what I like to call in the life, drinking and using. And we were doing this to the extent that all of us ended up in my mom's house back in about 1985. And so that 2 year condensed period, it got really bad. And I can speak for me. And so Ronnie went, I went into treatment in August of 85. And then we did the dance back and forth. Ronnie disappeared in July of 86. And October the 10th of 1986 is when I guess Grace called on me. And it's interesting, Don, because when Grace comes calling in that situation, it doesn't look like Grace. It's like stepping through the looking glass and you don't know. None of us know. One day drinking, next day, but you don't know that's your day. And you don't even know next day is the day till some months down the road. And you look back and say, I'm in a new world.
Yeah.
So these guys accosted me. I always say it's the weakest jack move ever, and they took something from me, and it resulted in me dodging a black truck the following morning. And I knocked on my mom's back door, and I promised her, straight lie, I promised her if she let me in the house, I would go in the program where Ronnie was. Had no thought, but as I look back, every step was orchestrated. I didn't know it. When I told what I thought was the lie, if you let me in the house, and apparently something was getting cemented without me knowing it. That's why when you talk about before we talked about surrender, I don't think I consciously surrendered. I was surrender. I was surrender. And that's the grace, because I'm not a surrendering guy. I had given up before, but something happens after two or three days. I feel remorseful. I feel beat down, but Wednesday comes.
And then I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad.
And Thursday is payday.
Well, that's the problem in early sobriety. I remember giving up, and 2 weeks later, it was like, I can't do this. I felt like I was going to blow up. What I ended up doing was asking the higher power I didn't believe in for help.
But that's so funny, Don, as you say that, when I listen to Ralph talk about that series of circumstances, that whooping I took in front of my mother wasn't the worst whooping that I've ever had. And it wasn't, I had a series of relapses starting in 1985 and continuing through early 1986, about four different circumstances where I would go in and out of a program. And then for one reason or another, I always would go on a pass. You know, after being on restriction from the recovery home, I would always go home on a pass, and I would find a reason that I don't have to quit completely, mm-hmm. right? Because my head, and mind you, even looking back, and I understand this so clearly looking back, I was never in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a treatment program, but I was not in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was doing that. We had AA meetings at our treatment center, but it was the inmates running the asylum. When I finally went to the last recovery home, I would just say, I wasn't thinking about God. I wasn't thinking about that. I was just tired.
You guys are famous for a term, WWA, is what people need, right? Because the worst thing that happened to me isn't necessarily my bottom. That doesn't necessarily surrender me. What is it that you guys say surrenders people?
A well-whooped ass.
A WWA.
And it was something about that one. It was a confluence of events, a convergence, if you would. Maybe it was because it was my mother there. Maybe I can't tell you what it was, the formula that it was that made me, when I got to that recovery home, like Ralph said, that after a couple of days, then it's like things change usually a few days later. Let me get a few meals mm-hmm. under my belt. Let me get become well fed. And my ego, it's amazing how fast ego rebuilds itself. It didn't that time. The humiliation turned into humility without me even knowing it. And I just stayed. All of a sudden, I just listened. I didn't complain anymore. I didn't start trying to tell the counselors how to counsel me. I didn't try. And this was it. H&I was bringing meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous into that recovery.
What's H&I?
Hospitals and institutions. Those good people in Alcoholics Anonymous that bring meetings to recovery centers, hospitals, the incarcerated, all the people who can't go to outside meetings, and they bring meetings to them, and they saved me, you know, when they came into that recovery, because I got to see Alcoholics Anonymous with flesh on it, right? I got to see it with men and women sharing, making it come alive for me. And I saw what an AA meeting really was.
Not the one you were running.
Right.
You know, the thing that is always stood out for me about you guys is not only that four of you are active in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but even more stunning to me than that is the commitment that you have, the service that you guys do. Will you talk about the Big Book Workshop, Never Too Early?
I can't take credit for much of what I look back on now and see as my CV, as my resume. I want to take credit for it. Like, oh, I did this. You know, we were young guys that were hungry, that came into this. Don was saying, so what happened that you stayed this time? And what I think is grace. If anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous or in the recovery world thinks that they can somehow put their finger on, well, what happened that you stayed, surrendered this? Good luck. That's nameless. This business of grace. So we tell stories. We tell what happened. We don't know why. We don't know how God operates, how he entered, but we tell the story that it did. And when it happened, my responsibility is to maintain it. So I got surrendered, and I've never thought I'd be drinking. I'm not trying to say it arrogantly, but I've just never felt like that. And I started going to meetings, and Ronnie and I both had the same home group. which is 9604 South Figueroa in Los Angeles. And I'm in a hotbed of recovery. And unlike a lot of people, I've never been to meetings where they didn't talk about the book and when they didn't talk about the steps. And here's the part where I started saying, sometimes I take credit. By nature, I'm curious, and anything I'm involved in, I was just kind of built like that too. When I'm involved in something, I'm all the way in. I'm either in or I'm out. I'm in or I'm out. I'm not testing waters. I'm all in, or I'm not fooling with it. And so why be in a 12-step program and not practice the 12 steps? That's the next logical thing. Part of it is, and I got to confess it, got to work with your defects, right? One of my defects is I like attention. I always wanted to be first in the class. I raise my hand. I'm a good student. So that's my wheelhouse. So learning the 12 steps is my wheelhouse. I didn't know about grasping and developing a manner of living. I didn't know about, you know, a relationship with a power. Initially, I wanted to learn the 12 steps because that's me and Ronnie's makeup. We're learners. We're scholars. We're students. And so got to work with whatever. You know, that's why 6 and 7, when it says remove every single defect except the ones that stand in the way of my usefulness. And that sounds strange. He was using that. That's not entirely a defect that I'm inquisitive and I'm a student, but it is that I wanted to be smart. I wanted to, but that's not bad. You don't know. You know what I'm saying? You don't know. You're new in AA. You're hungry. You're enthusiastic. And so we saw some people present the big book in a way that it was so intriguing. It was at a marathon meeting in Los Angeles at the Crenshaw Lotto Club. And me and Ronnie and my friend, the late Leon M., we were road dogs. And we came out of that lit up. We said, we want that. And we approached two members of that group and ask them if they would take us through the book the way they had been. And in November of 1987, we sat around my mom's dining room table, about 12 or 13 people. And we started going through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page, line by line. And you had to, and that first year, we liked it. And we didn't intend to do anything except that first year. But as we were going through it, people heard about it. And they said, we want to get on board. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we finished, we said, oh, let's do it again. Being the kind of guys we are, if we like something, anything worth doing is worth overdoing, used to be my motto. We like it. We did it. And some more people came. And pretty soon in my mom's little living room, we had too many people. And you had to get there really early to get a seat in the living room.
Ralph, can I throw something else in there also that happened during that first year? Early on, a few weeks after we had started the workshop, there were these two guys, Joe M. and Charlie P., who were going around the country presenting something called The Big Book Comes Alive. And we as a workshop heard about it, and our little motley crew of 12 or 13 of us all went together to this weekend presentation. And these men wove stories and they talked about the book in such a way. And we were writing in the margins. And so, see, this is where what Ralph said comes up. Again, for me, I'm a nerd. I love stories. I love books. I love reading. And we started writing and we came back to that house with an additional vigor and interest and desire and whatever other words you want to put to it, that was an impetus for us going forward in that workshop that I think still carries.
That workshop's been going on for a long time.
Right now, to bring it current day, one of the bleakest periods, COVID, and that period, there were so many blessings that came from it. And I think that's how God always is. You know, and one of the great blessings for me, yep, and there are other people who see it. I have some friends who say, I'm an addition guy. I don't see Zoom instead of live. I see Zoom in addition to. I always have. And there were some great benefits. In fact, I got renewed in my recovery as a result of that. That's how I know I was. You know, that's a and so much of Alcoholics Anonymous was introduced. There are a lot of members who were introduced to an AA they didn't know existed. And so to bring the workshop story full circle, where we are now as a result of the pandemic, we went on Zoom and we're up to this morning. We had over 450 people on from all over the world. You know, we touch, I don't know if we had anybody from Asia, but we have Africa represented. We have Europe represented for sure, you know, a strong European presence and, you know, Mexico. It's international and it has reinvigorated me. I know that.
How can people find?
It's an open group, but we're not listed in a directory. So we meet on Sunday mornings, 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. That's 12:30 Eastern, 12:30 to 2, 9:30 to 11 Pacific. And then you got to do the conversion for European and, you know.
You know, maybe we should give people the numbers to log in.
So the login for our Big Book workshop is 778-8142-6182. And it has no password, no passcode.
Just like a live in-person setting, we come early so that people can come and greet each other and, you know, people stay later afterwards. So it opens up 45 minutes earlier than it starts. It starts at 9:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. It opens up at 8:45 a.m.
In addition to it being this extraordinarily powerful discussion of the text, the basic text, and how it relates to my life, what you guys always call putting skin on it, not just what the book says, but what does that look like in practice? It's the fellowship. I don't want to underplay the fellowship, right? Mm-hmm. Which is perfect for the name, Never Too Early. People come early, the chatter before the meeting, the chatter after the meeting, the depth of connection. I have met so many people from around the world, as have you guys, that are now my family, that are now my, like, for real, I'm a ride with you, you're my family. And so the beauty of the workshop isn't just the learning, but the connecting.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that said that you couldn't make the connections through an online presence. And I'm not one to debate because it's all just give me more, right? And there's so many people that I sponsor right now that I would not have been, I wouldn't have met them. And but for a platform like this, I would not be able to. I can see them, right? I can see them when I hear a fifth step, or I have weekly meetings with them, and I'm able to do that. And I don't care what anybody, it translates.
It translates.
How do you sponsor? What are the expectations to work with somebody?
Well, I don't cookie cutter sponsor. I you know, I am a guy. And in sponsorship for me, I'm going to try to just be really brief so Ronnie can share. Sponsorship for me is evolved. It's evolutionary. It's like parenting. You know, I have a friend, Bill C, and you know, and he was talking about early sponsorship and people are worried sometimes I'm not qualified. And Bill, you saw, you got to kill a couple of them to get it right.
There's some gallows humor there.
You know, and I started sponsoring with about 11 months. And my first guy that I started sponsoring, Craig C, and he's still sober. But the second guy, I botched it. I made a mess of it. Some of my defects. He was a God in light. Ooh, on the podcast saying it. I didn't like him. And he was intimidating to me, and he was rough around the edges. I'm not a rough, but he saw something in me. The thing about sponsorship, now, when you think about it, we're a society of people who you cannot tell us nothing. We have people who stand up to the police. I have guys tell the police, I've seen it, take that badge off, take the gun off. And now let's see how bad. We have people who will stand up in front of a judge and tell them. And so the miracle of sponsorship to me is that something happens. We're reading the chapter, working with others, and about winning the confidence of another. Something happens. That's how you know our program is certainly divinely inspired, because something takes place with folk like us, that one man or woman voluntarily, they're grown. Parents can't tell them anything. Parole officers can't tell them anything. Teachers in school used to find them just, you know, you go to those guys. And they voluntarily say, I'm going to allow your voice to be louder than my head. That blows me away that I get the privilege that people do that. And this guy decided that he saw something in me. I'm green, though, and sponsoring. I'm new. My default setting comes out with this guy. He was getting an apartment. I paid his first month's rent. I bought him a bus pass. I bought him a calling card at that time. That was 1987. And what are you saying, Ralph? It was easy for me to spend money and think I'm discharging my sponsorship obligations. Look, yeah. I'm doing stuff, but I didn't want to spend time. I didn't want to give him me. I started abusing this great privilege. I started talking down to him. I was very short and curt with him. I was very dismissive of him. He could have broke me in half. And so it started eating my lunch. Even early, I started getting this idea of, because sponsorship is so safe. And so I went to this lady and I shared what I was doing. And she was a great member of our fellowship, Betty T. She's gone now. And she was a remarkable sponsor. And I told her what I was doing. Betty had the ability to cut without cutting. She said, baby, somebody who's so smart can show be stupid. I said, Betty, did you call me stupid? And sounds like somebody owes somebody an amends. What? And I learned the lesson. I saw up my pants at sponsorship early on. It's the one time. I'm the kind of guy that gets bought experience, though. And I bought that experience, and it was a good lesson for me. And so anyway, to your question, more to the point, I don't cookie cutter sponsor. I sponsor, I lead with my heart. Don't nobody know, care how much you know if they don't know how much you care. That's an old saying. And I'm just built that way, man. I sponsor inside my personality. I don't say the way I sponsor is the way. There are other people who keep a distance and the rest. I'm in the trenches with a sponsee right now. Let me yield to Ronnie, because I could talk so long about sponsorship, man. That's the greatest privilege, I think, though, that I've had since I've gotten in here. Inside the program. I'm not a person that's myopic enough to just be in the program. I'm blessed enough that not only do I have a family, I have a real family. And my greatest privilege is to be a dad to my girls and my son and my grands and a son to my mom. Now that's the greatest, greatest.
Yes. So I take on all comers. Anybody who asks me to sponsor, any man or woman, who asked me, I'm not just, I've gone places where I heard men stick with the men, women stick with the women. Well, I stick with the alcoholics. And so they come in all sizes and genders. And so I take on anybody that asks me that feels like they can trust me. They can trust me to hold a confidence, that they can get guidance from me. I will sponsor them. And it looks different. Like Ralph says, it's not cookie cutter. I try to, there are a few things that I try to put in place, like you've got to go to meetings, you've got to get a commitment, you've got to call me at least, we need to have at least one day out of the week that we set some time aside where I find out what's going on with you so that you're not hiding, where you don't think, well, I haven't talked to him in such a long time, so that when the stuff hit the fan, that I can't call him. Right. You know, I need people to feel like that we have a connection. So I try to make sure that that's happening all the time. And in terms of taking them through the book, It varies with everybody. I'm not one of those that can sit down, like Ralph said. I have a full life. I have a lot of things happening, right? And so I don't have time with the number of sponsees I had. If I were to going to try to take each one individually through each one of the steps, I wouldn't have the time to do it. With the new ones, I do that. With all the ones who are within their first year, I do that. I have two workshops that I do, the big one that we have, and I have a smaller big book workshop that I do that's a closed workshop where a lot of the people I sponsor, I make sure come to that workshop where they're going through the book with me, where I know on a weekly basis we're walking through the book, that when we get to the fifth step, that we're scheduling fifth steps that they're going to do with me, that we're doing 10th steps, that we're doing all of that. And so I try to keep a hold on that, except they're all different. I have a lot of people that I sponsor who have over 20 years of sobriety. So their sponsorship looks different than those people I'm sponsoring who have less than a year. So it really differs for all of them.
Ralph, Ronald, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
It's a joy. Thank you, guys. I love you both.
Wow. Thank you for having us.
Hey, Don, what are you playing with on your phone? We're supposed to be recording a podcast here.
Oh, sorry, Sam. I was just checking my spiritual fitness in the new Grapevine app.
Oh, the daily spiritual maintenance checklist? Well, are you fit?
Yep, says so here. And look, there's a daily quote and a sobriety calculator.
And you can read the latest issue and all of the past issues all the way back to 1944.
And you can have the app read the magazine to you out loud as a playlist. It's the monthly magazine in print and audio.
Right in your pocket. The Grapevine and Lavinia apps are now available for both iOS and Android phones. To get yours, go to the App Store on your phone.
Bartholomew, as your sponsor, last week I suggested you incorporate some exercise into your recovery program. Now, how's it going?
Not so great.
Oh?
The only exercise I seem to be doing is jumping to conclusions, running around in circles, and bending over backwards to avoid my amends.
It's really not that funny. Thanks for joining us. The AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour is posted every Monday and is produced by AA Grapevine, Inc. We don't speak for AA as a whole. We share the experience, strength, and hope of members to help others recover from alcoholism. Podcast info, including how to call in, is at aagrapevine.org/podcast. Search AA Grapevine in the App Store on your phone or find AA Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. All things Grapevine are available at aagrapevine.org. If you want to know more about AA, search online for Alcoholics Anonymous in your city or visit aa.org.
That was freaking amazing.